Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Good morning and welcome into Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker as we report here from early October here in Atlanta. Biz Rocket is a show that gives us an opportunity to highlight some of the executives and business owners that we have here in Atlanta and look to gain some insight from their experiences, both their challenges, their successes, some of the things that they've gone through in their business world, and get a glimpse into what they're doing right now. And today, we've got a guest from Challenger, Gray, and Christmas, and that is Alan McNeil, who's vice president with this outplacement company that I'm familiar with here in the Atlanta area. So, welcome in.
Thank you, John.
And Alan's got a great background, but I'm going to let him tell you because I know he can tell you better than I can. Football player extraordinaire, star quarterback, you know, had all the ladies in high school and in college just, you know, dropping at his feet, right?
No.
No, well, he's bashful because, you know, we don't want to go there. Anyway, we also had some experience in owning a business and all sorts of great stuff. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background, and then we'll get into some of your experiences.
Good. Growing up in the South, I'm from Columbia, South Carolina, out in the country of Columbia. In the 50s and 60s, there wasn't a lot to do other than be involved in sports. So you got very involved in sports. And so I thoroughly enjoyed all the athletic events. I was kind of an oddity in that in the ninth grade, our football team went 0-10. I'm not sure we scored a point. Had a new coach come in, and over the next 3 years, we lost four games and lost two of them on purpose to set some other teams up.
Oh, my God.
That's a different
you
story.
You guys were already doing that back then, yeah. Huh? That's good.
But I was an oddity in that I started at quarterback in the 10th grade, and I was 5'4" and weighed 95 pounds. I was the cutest little thing you ever saw on a football field. And by the time I was a senior, I'd grown up to 6 foot and weighed 115 pounds. So I was like a pencil.
Oh, my
out
God.
There. But the newspaper had fallen in love with me. We were winning all our games and everything. So the big schools had to recruit me, Carolina, Clemson. But I couldn't play that. I got broken in half.
Right.
So I went to a small school in South Carolina called Presbyterian College.
Yeah.
And was able to play 4 years there. Had a great time. Stepped on my scales Thanksgiving. We always played our last game of the year Thanksgiving Day.
Yep.
And had gotten all the way up to 140 pounds. So,
yeah, good thing you didn't play in the SEC.
Right.
That may have been a problem.
But what the scouts for the pros said, you have a NFL arm and a Pop Warner body. There's no way you can even think
don't
about
even try it.
Right.
Don't even try it.
Don't go there.
So go use your brain someplace else.
So all I'd ever wanted to be was a football coach. My father was a football coach. He died when I was very young, but he was a football coach. So I went into coaching and coached for 13 years, became the big head coach, athletic director at the high school level in South Carolina.
Yeah.
And firmly believe that high school athletics is not about football or basketball. It's about communities and kids learning where they need to go. Now, I like to win. Everybody likes to win. So you set it up that way.
Yep.
But you've got to be doing things the right way with it. It was a very great life for me, but I'm the type person that gets totally involved in what I'm doing. So it came a point from a family time that I needed to do something else. And so then I went into consulting of leadership and management. And how do you transition that? It's because of people you know.
Right.
And went to work with my old high school football coach.
Really?
And, so we had several coaches there in Columbia that were doing leadership development, how leaders changed habits of leadership, how they led people, how they focused people, how they let people help them. And we did that from 1983 through 1991. And then the chairman of the firm, he decided he was going to retire, and we couldn't figure out a buyout. So everybody went away, and that's when me and my wife started our own firm doing the same thing. And it's a great relationship you build with people. So essentially what I did was going from coaching kids to coaching adults.
Right.
And how
right.
they did.
How much of a transition was that?
Less
than you'd imagine? Or
The biggest transition, and this is what I tell people in our world that are going through transition, they have tons and tons of knowledge. So they say sometimes, well, I think I'll go into consulting and use this knowledge and help people. Well, consulting, as you know in your business, you consult with people, but consulting doesn't do anything unless somebody is willing to buy it from you. And so it's a sales position. And
right.
going from a coach who everybody wants to talk to all the time to having to make sure you sell a service to be able to deliver it was a shock to my system.
Yeah.
That they didn't want to talk to me.
Yeah.
Anytime
yeah.
I picked up the phone, they just didn't say, oh, yes, please come see me.
Right.
And that was probably the biggest transition, is to realize you're really doing a sales job, and then once you sell it, you can help people by doing what you do. But the job essentially came about because it's who you know. And I knew this person. He was willing to take a chance on me doing that. Then we did it ourselves after getting experience. And then one of my former football coaches that I'd known since 1964 was working for Challenger Gray and Christmas. And we were out to dinner with them in Columbia. And they said, Alan, we need somebody in Atlanta. And so it's one of those things. We met with them. My wife and I have been working together since 1983.
Wow.
And so we are the only husband-wife team in all of the world for Challenger.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And so it was a thing where we had a great life going, but Challenger, they made us an offer that was hard to turn down, and have thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed that since 1999 when we started with them. So the way I look at it, I've had three different careers and have flat out loved everyone that I do.
Great stuff. Great stuff. So, and you were transitioning into with CGC, a very for the outplacement world, very slow period of time in the end of 99. I mean, everybody was employed, nobody was getting laid off, and then the tidal wave hit. And,
well, Challenger Gray and Christmas is not tremendously impacted from that.
Really?
In that when things are going well, there are still people that, for whatever reason, they don't mix with who they have. Things have changed.
Yep.
And our business is predicated on working with people one-on-one. We are not the large, come into an office, run 500 people through at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything we do is one-on-one. So when there's not a lot of layoffs, people are still using us for one person here, three person there, four over here, because all companies go through changes, which a lot of times mean people have to change. Then when you get to the point where we were for a long time after, you know, 9/11 really hit the economy, then we were doing more of the high-level people, but we still don't set up for massive numbers of people.
So your business really wasn't impacted that much.
It grew.
It did grow.
There was just more happening.
Yeah.
One of the things we do is we measure announced layoffs for the country and been doing this since 1984.
Mm-hmm.
And before 9/11, and my figures might be off a little bit, I'm doing it from memory,
sure,
the largest number of announced layoffs across the country was something like, for a year, 600,000. You got to 2001 through 2005, the smallest number was 1.4 million, and the largest number was 2.3 million.
Wow.
And so there was just so much activity out there that, you know, everybody was getting into the outplacement business.
Yeah.
But ours kept growing. And what we've seen in 2011 is companies have done a lot of cutting over the years. And so the first 6 months of 2011 was the lowest number of announced corporate layoffs in 11 years. And then July, August, September, they've gone up. And there was one came out today. I wasn't able to see it. I just saw it quickly. But it jumped up almost, it was 116,000 announced layoffs for the month of September. But that was highly impacted by the government and Bank of America, who put 30. And that's going to be over a three-year period with them.
Right.
30,000, I meant, not just 30.
Yeah, not 30.
Right.
So help our listeners and those that are either going through transition or maybe concerned about transition. What, in your viewpoint, has been the hardest thing for those people to accept, to deal with, and to kind of move forward with when they're going through transition?
First, you have to address the emotional aspect of it. It's like losing someone that's close to you almost, and you go through the grief and the madness and all, and realize you're going through those stages. The sooner you can say, okay, now I need to focus on what's going to happen in my future to take care of myself, my family, the quicker they will be able to start making advances on there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people today, because of technology, they think that the technology is what you use to find a job. They're spending all their time on job boards, applying for jobs, sending out information, all and they're staying behind a computer.
Right.
A job search is about people. And you can't get any more basic than that, is getting out and seeing people. As I looked at my jobs that I've had over my life, every one of them has come because I knew somebody, was introduced to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember ever receiving anything that I applied for. Well, I take it back. When I was in graduate school, I got a job at a brickyard, what they call hacking bricks. It just went in and applied for that job. I was just going down the street. But this was the 70s. It's a different world we live in now. And so the biggest aspect people need to do is know, I need to get out and see people. And what they will be so surprised about is how much people are willing to help them. You go back to the people you have known, and you talk to them about, hey, I'm in a job search, and I would like your advice. And people are more than willing to give you advice. And then when you hear about a job, that's the key, finding who in your network might have some introduction into the company, into the hiring manager, some connection with that company that can get your name noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Because most companies, when they post jobs or something, you're looking at anywhere from 500 to 3,000 resumes.
Yeah.
And how do you distinguish yourself and stand out from the crowd? And it's usually not because you've written a wonderful cover letter or a wonderful resume.
Keeping to one page and all that other stuff,
it's,
right?
Yeah. It's who do you know that can get your name. Now, is it foolproof? No, but it gets you looked at.
Right.
Versus just being in that giant stack that people have to go through.
And I would imagine the social media, the computer connection, and all that kind of LinkedIn type, that's where that is most valuable.
Right.
Is that what you'd say?
LinkedIn is a tremendous tool in connections. It's trying to do a lot of things from a job search standpoint and all, but it's about connecting with people. And the first time I meet with somebody after they've lost their position is we want them to start making a list of everybody they have dealt with during their working career and start writing the name down. If they would recognize their name, if I picked up the phone and called them and they would recognize my name, put it on there.
Right.
You go back to all the social groups that you belong to, whether it's your PTA, your church, with you, the cystic fibrosis. Mm-hmm. All these people that you've dealt with, you make a list of that. If you are in a company, you've probably had vendors call on you. Make a list of all of those because they want to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is your start of a job search, of reaching out to these people. And you use LinkedIn to find where they are, but then pick up the phone and talk to them.
Right.
And just ask them for advice. Let them know what your situation is. And then when you hear, they'll tell you things. Other people will tell you things. You might even see a job on a job board. Then you find in your network who might have that connection and ask them for help.
What have you found to be, you know, because you take these people every day through this whole experience, through the loss all the way to the, okay, I found another position. What's the silver lining that you found when people go through this process more so than not?
Two things about it. One is they find out how good people are. Now, obviously, they're jerks in the world. We know that.
Right.
But the vast majority of people are willing to help and try to do what they can.
Mm-hmm.
And so just how good the people of America are to help one another.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second thing is how much it can impact your life when you get that job that is right for you and how happy you can be about it. That I lost my job, but this might have been the best thing that ever happened to me. Now, it's hard to tell somebody that when you walk in and they've just been told that nobody loves them anymore.
Right.
But how many people have turned that into a positive by doing something they really care about and really like doing and getting to meet new people, new situations, new opportunities, that it can be extremely uplifting when it happens. Now, it's no fun going through a job search, but the people that you meet that help you make it worthwhile, and then what comes out on the other end. And here's the thing people need to, I hope, realize, that it is a marathon in a job search. It doesn't happen quickly. We measure carefully people in our program on how long it takes them to find jobs,
mm-hmm.
and we publish it every quarter.
Yep.
The third quarter, they just came out yesterday, people in our programs that found jobs in the third quarter, and the median salary of these people was $108,000. It was right at 3.5 months.
Really?
Yes. And 92% of these people earned equivalent or better salaries.
Hmm.
So here's the thing we want to, there are jobs out there.
Yeah.
We're swapping a lot of jobs. There's not a lot of net gains.
Yeah.
But what's happening is XYZ lets three people go, but they hire two back in another area because those three just didn't fit what they needed for the future.
Right.
And so there are jobs out there, but it is because you are doing what you're supposed to go find them, not just applying and hoping.
Yeah.
Tell people to buy a lottery ticket.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck with that whole thing.
Right.
Have people that have gone through this process, or what is it that people that have gone through this process should be doing when they're now in a position to set themselves up for a smoother transition if it were to, or when it does occur again?
Okay. Two things, and we tell people this over and over, even people not in our program that I meet and help, is one, you have certain things to sell, and that's your experience. So keep whatever you want to call it, a victory log, a list of your accomplishments. Don't wait till after you've been somewhere 7 years and all of a sudden I've got to put together a resume, because you have to have one.
And you forget, right?
You don't know what happened when it happened. So keep that victory log of we were able to reduce waste 14% during a 6-month period because we put in lean manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you didn't do that by yourself, but you were involved with it. So on a resume, you can take credit for being involved with it.
Right. Yep.
But we forget those numbers, and numbers, dollars, percentages distinguish you between people that have a resume and talking about responsibilities.
Right.
But if we don't keep that up, it's going to be very, very hard to recreate it in your mind.
Yeah.
And the second thing is always maintain your connections, your contacts. That what happens to people. They get in a job and then they get their head down, running hard. Before they were out seeing people, talking to people, you can still have coffee. You can still shoot a note to somebody only. It doesn't take much to maintain connections.
Yeah.
But it's not good to only connect with people when you need something.
Right.
You've got to maintain your networks. And, you know, you don't like to say it this way, but the world in the United States has become, we're all free agents now. And if you are not keeping your antenna attuned to what's going on in the world out there from a business standpoint, from a job standpoint, you might not be doing what you need to protect yourself and your family. So keeping all that going while still doing a tremendous job at work is a balancing act. But you can't drop it once you find that job.
So tell us a little bit more about CGC. I know that you work with people going through transition, and a lot of it's one-on-one type work. Tell us more about what somebody might experience if they use CGC for that type of help.
All right. Our normal entry point is the human resource people, because they're the ones that usually make decisions. So I like and meet and know every human resource.
HR is probably your best friend,
yeah,
right?
That it's a wonderful organization.
It is. Yeah.
And what our work is really based on is relationships. How can we be a resource for somebody where they know that I'm going to take care of their people? If you go on paper, you look at different things. You know, we're not going to be the low-cost provider. And so you look, well, they do this, we can do it for this amount. Whereas if it's based on a relationship that they know you're going to provide superior service and really take care of their people, they know what happens to them during the process. That's the work that we do. And so what happens, an HR person will call me and say, Alan, we've got a situation. We're going to have an individual we're going to have to separate with. I don't get into a lot of reasons why.
Right.
That's really not my role to find out why you're doing this or what. I need to know what about the person. What do they do? Any special situations. So when they go in and meet with the person and tell them, then the next thing they do is saying, we have Alan McNeil from Challenger Gray and Christmas, the best outplacement firm, would love for you just to talk to them. And they bring them over to me. And from there, you're looking at where is their emotional, what can I do to help this person? And tell them we're going to be there for them. They don't remember a whole lot about what you say the first day. Their mind's going 90 miles an hour about. Then the next day I'm in contact with them, and the next day meeting with them, whatever we need to do to get them through to where they're ready to do a job search. And in a job search, you have two things to sell. One is your history, your background, what are you qualified for? And the second is, what are you bringing to the party as an individual?
Right.
If there are three people are qualified for the job, why should they hire you? What are you bringing in addition to qualifications? And we ask them to do a very in-depth initial assessment. It's not a psychological. It's just telling themselves and us, what is it that I have to offer to a company? And this can take week, 2 weeks to get done. I'm in contact with them, helping them get that done. When it's done, we will write the resume for them. We don't want them writing it. We'll write it for them, have our professionals do that. And then we pick our job coach that we think is best suited to them.
Mm-hmm.
From a background, a history, a personality standpoint, I get input on it. And then we pick the job coach in our company that's best suited, no matter where that job coach is, and bring that job coach to where what we consider the client is.
Yeah.
And for 2 days of one-on-one work with them, putting together their entire marketing plan of how do you find where jobs are? How do you get in front of hiring people? How do you get people to help you? How do you use LinkedIn to help you? How do you use the internet part to help you? But mostly, how do you get other people to help you, because that's where most jobs come from.
Right.
And then all your contacts, all that we do to help them for that, sooner or later, you're going to have to sit down across the table from somebody.
Right.
And so we spend a good bit of that second day with them on their personal interviewing skills so that it's all tailored to what they are doing, what stories they're telling, what words they're using to describe themselves. So we want to push everything in as quick as we can for them to get into the job search when they're emotionally ready.
Mm-hmm.
Then their job coach is calling them every week.
Right.
Not as a report, but to brainstorm, to consult, to see what's going, modifying their approach. And this lasts until there are different levels of the program depending on what a company wants to spend.
Yeah.
So let's say it's a six-month program. Well, we'll be upset if they don't have a job in 6 months, but sometimes
it happens,
doesn't.
Right?
It happens. Yeah. But after 6 months, we don't stop with them. They can call us all they want, and we still work with them. We don't want to ever say no, but we have to stop our proactive calling them every week.
Right.
And then my job and my counterparts across the country's job is to be their local connection for people that they know are, I hear of a job at this company. Do you know anybody there?
Oh, okay.
And so I'll send a quick notice that I've got somebody that's applied for this job, title, this number. And if it's the HR person, I said, would you mind getting it to the recruiter with my recommendation for this?
Yeah, yeah.
And so what you're looking at doesn't mean they're going to
get the
job.
You're like a king LinkedIn. You're like
I work
king
hard
pin.
At LinkedIn.
You're like the king LinkedIn pin. Wow.
So we have, it's a thing. That's why I spend my time is just meeting people and how we can help them. I won't link in with people unless I meet them because LinkedIn is a helping tool.
Right.
To me, that's what it is.
Right.
And so if I sent a note and said, I'd love for you to meet John Baker, I got to feel like there's a 95% chance y'all will come together.
Yeah. There's a
or
good,
I don't want them on LinkedIn with me.
Right.
So,
right.
So that's the process that we go through. Now, the biggest thing, we're privately owned. Mr. Challenger, who started out placement in 1962 in Chicago, he's 88 now and still our chairman.
Wow.
John, his oldest son, is our president. Coming in this morning on WSB, they quoted him on the radio about the job losses.
Really?
That he's kind of the guru of employment in America.
Yeah.
So we're still privately owned, so we can tailor what a company needs. We don't have the size. These are the programs. What do you really need?
Mm-hmm.
And then we tailor it for the individual.
And, you know, you hear these stories about executives and their searches taking so much longer than kind of the baseline workers. And, you know, I've heard, you know, if your salary is, you know, X hundreds of thousands of dollars, it can take you that many months to find it or what have you. Do you find that those statistics run true, or is it really just how active and how aggressive you are in terms of the networking and the network that you have?
Okay. If you are active and active in the right way, those statistics are not true. We have what we call our C-suite program for the top line.
Right.
Salary some 400-something thousand. Right. Last year and a half, the median search time has been about 4.7 months for
them. Wow, that's really fast.
Now, some of these people are what we call settled. That they realize they don't need to work anymore.
Yeah, it's so, like, this is an option for me. They skew the bell curve, I would imagine.
But what we use is a median versus an average, because they would really mess it up. So it's half higher, half lower.
Because they're out there for 2 or 3 years, and they consult here, and then they don't, and then they stop, and then they interim CEO and that kind of stuff.
From an outplacement standpoint, we fight people from going into consulting.
Really?
It's an easy out for outplacement.
Yeah.
What we want to make sure is they're running towards something they love and not running away from a bad experience that they had in the corporate world.
Right.
So it's a standpoint, all right, what are you doing? We help them figure out how they're going if they want to do that. And they really, how are you going to pay for it? What is going to be your marketing plan? What are the, how are you going to finance this? And then make sure they know the statistics that 90% of the people are out of business after 1 year.
Yeah.
And then the ones that 10% that make it, 90% of those are out of business in 5 years.
Right.
So consulting is a difficult thing to do. So we want to make sure it's what they are running toward and really want to do it.
As a passion. It's got to be a passion versus an alternative.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And with the with the executives that are transitioning out, when they find the right position, are you seeing that locally, or are you seeing a lot of transition in terms of moves that they're needing to go through?
All right. For example, again, we measure carefully people in our program only. This is across the United States. People making over $100,000, median salary $150,000, half between $100,000 and $150,000, half over $150,000. Their search times were 3.6 months the last 6 months.
Which seems really short to me.
It because they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Now, obviously, half are over 3.6, so there might be somebody out there 8, 9, 10 months, depending on circumstances.
Yep.
Now, 19.23% of those relocated. Hmm. So a fifth of them had to relocate for the next job.
Which also seems low.
It is contacts, people you know, jobs come through from people that know you. And that's where they spend their time.
Have you found, and this goes back to maybe not just consulting, but owning a business, that recently there's been a large push where people are so kind of bent on having their own business. Have you found that more now than before? I mean, we work in a similar grouping or environment. So a lot of our clients that we're working with are executives going through transition. And I've been doing it for about 12, 13 years, right? And it seems like that's picked up. I don't know. Do you find that?
It has not, from a statistical standpoint, for
still
us.
Still the same as it has been.
Yeah, same as it has been. Again, that's because we push them pretty hard, make sure that's what you want to do. And what we find is there are opportunities out there for franchises and all. But a lot of them, unless you really get into it and own several, 5, 6, 8, 10 of them, it will not give you the income that you had as an executive in the corporate world. So that's one of the challenges for them. You have to own 10 Subways to get to where you want to be. And that's a lot of work.
There's a lot of things going on with 10 Subways. Right. There's a whole lot of, ham being thrown around at 10 Subways. So tell me about the execs that have gone through this process and the time frame that they go through finding this next position. I've also heard statistics about how long execs tend to be in a position is shorter now than it used to be. Is that something that you found as well?
The median tenure that we have now is less than 8 years for executives in a job. That companies making sure they have the right number of people, the right mix of people and all, companies are spending more time making sure that's right, which equates out to making changes at the executive, the mid-management level. That these people, and they're not as long. Rarely do I run into now, I meet somebody and they've been at that company 23 years.
30 years,
At the mid-management executive level. A lot of times at the production level and they've got skills that company needs. Yeah. And usually the times when you lose those people is when market conditions change and you just can't afford, because you don't want to lose that skill that they have, which in America we're not – on the trade side is not doing as well from a skill standpoint. And we've got people that can do certain things that they've been doing it 25 years.
Right.
You don't want to lose those. And it's, as I said, mostly market conditions when those people have to lose a job.
Well, and you bring up an interesting point there. You have a lot of people coming through transition in this since the 08, which has been kind of that next wave that's been coming through. 09 was a huge, huge year. That are the, WASPy, middle-aged, baby boomer, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it tends to be that group that's this major push. Are we in that wave? Is that something that's true? And if our listeners are one of those people, somebody who's that baby boomer generation, are there a lot of barriers to that entry? Like they are feeling like they're getting on those job applications and interviews?
There is an aging of America. The median age of people in our program has crept up from 44 to 48
right
now.
Yep.
And so it's there. So we do a thing with people that are 50 and over. We pull, they're in our statistics, we pull those out to see how much longer it takes them to find jobs. And it runs about 2 to 3 weeks longer for somebody over 50 to find a job on the median than somebody else.
Now that my listeners who are baby boomers are saying, "I'll take that 2 weeks, man. I'll buy that
in a minute,
for $1.
In a minute.
No problem." But
and again, it goes back again that there is ageism in America. That I walk into a room, you don't have that problem. You don't either. But they walk in and they see the
Alan, our producer, just got an almost. You're old. You're on the you're on the cusp.
But
you're right
not there.
And I haven't quite gone gray yet, but my four kids are sending me that way really quick. So I'm with you. I'm coming on your heels.
But you walk in and they see the hair,
yeah,
and they're not going to hire you.
Yeah.
That's just the way the world is. Yeah. But you can't let that bother you as a baby boomer, which I am, that people want folks that can produce results for them. And so it's a numbers game again, getting out and seeing people, meeting people, being introduced to people to find the person that needs your skill set to get something done and be able to talk about what you can do to help them in that. Matching your skills, what you can do with what a company needs is how you find a job. And you can't do that until you get in to talk to somebody. And probably one of the biggest challenges people have when they're in the job search, going in and interviewing with people, is they want to tell them what they can do for them. And they're telling them all these wonderful things, but the company's interest in is, can you do what I need?
Right.
And so we have to listen to them and then be able to tell the story of our successes on what they need.
On point on that.
They're right. She's telling them I can do these 17 things.
It's like throwing darts at a...
You're shooting blanks.
Good luck hitting something, right?
Right.
All right. So obviously networking is key. And, you know, I have always been trained that there are two kind of people in the world. There are connectors and there are non-connectors. There are people that just, it's in their marrow, it's in their bone marrow to connect people. And then there's other people that could really, they might do it if they're forced into it or if they have to or guilted or whatever, but it's just not part of that. A, would you agree with that statement?
I would agree with that statement.
So B, how do you identify connectors?
Okay. First of all, you go out after the people you know, all right? Even if they're not connectors, they will talk to you.
Because they
know
you. Yeah.
And so you let them know what's going on. He might work at ABC company, doesn't connect with anybody, but 2 weeks down the road, you hear about a job at ABC company, and the person you know will be willing to help you.
Okay.
So you don't stay away from people you know. But when you are talking with people, what you want to do is say, hey, is there anybody that you think it would be good for me to know? And if you're out there in a job search, take advantage of the different things that are out there. There are many churches that have wonderful programs that are going on for that. Take any chance to go to those. And it's one, to learn something, but two, to meet people and help people.
Okay, do you have any examples of groups that do a really
the Roswell
good job
United Methodist Church, Cornerstone? Yeah. Just about any of the larger churches are going to have that. And get involved from two standpoints. What can it do for you? But in my opinion, if you're not going there, what can I do to help these people here too?
Mm-hmm.
You're going for the wrong reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
a two-way street. If you're not willing to help, why do you think people should help you? The couple of things we talk about, networks that you can get into, and I won't mention a name on the air, but like the one you're involved with, those are things you need
you
to
be involved.
You can
mention them on the air, absolutely.
Okay, all right, like the Kettering Network is a very good network for executives. Being sponsored into that, The big thing there is to make sure you're making the individual connections, not just going to a meeting. Who can I have coffee with next week? Who can I set up a time to sit down and see how I can help them and they can help me?
Right.
So I always believe that the big meetings are great. Pull out one or two people that you want to meet individually. That's where you really get the value to see what their story is, what's yours, how can you help one another.
Right, right. Identifying that connector, it's a matter of seeing if they're open to those kinds of responses and then and then whether they actually do it.
Right. Yeah. And what you want to make sure, I always make definitive statements when I shouldn't, is there's never a bad meeting with somebody. But you can quickly identify connectors. And in your field, there are certain people that are the go-to people in that field, whether it's accounting, whether it's a certified financial, whether it is engineering. There are certain people that are known in that field, and you want to try to get introductions to them. And what they do is introduce you to other connectors that are out there. You know, I like to look at myself as a connector, but the main thing is I introduce them to other people that can connect them, and all of a sudden, people's LinkedIn go from 40 people to 212 in a month period because they are connecting with other people.
Right. A whole Bob Littell, you probably know Bob, the whole net weaving concept is kind of wrapped into that process.
And you know, there's so many different things out there that can help you. You can't do them all, but you find where you are and what you're in and see where you can move forward with that.
So, Alan, who would be an ideal client or group for you? I mean, is it the larger organization, smaller? Does it matter?
It does. We worked for 50 years, so we work with probably 90% of the Fortune 500 people.
You're right.
But the ideal client for us is a company that wants their people taken care of. They want them treated right. They like they would want to be treated. They are interested in, do their people find jobs, not we've just made them feel good by offering them something.
Right.
And so it's what does that company want for their people and how can we be partners with them to get that for their folks? We are not real good when they come up with the strictly RFP where you say, what's going to be the bottom dollar?
Here's what they do, boom, boom, boom. Right.
And, and that's not the ideal organization. Now, obviously, we talk to people. We work with some very, very large companies. But if I've worked with some companies that had 20 people, and they've had somebody that's been there very long that they can't afford to keep them because the market's turned, and they want something good to happen. So one individual is as important to us as if you've got 50 that's going on.
Right.
So
it's,
again, it goes back. I don't go down a list of this is the company, this. Who do I know? Who wants their people taken care of? Who can I develop a relationship with so they know that we will do it? And then we produce for them when they give us an opportunity.
Good stuff.
To work with their people.
Good stuff. So one of the things that we always like to ask our guests is for a pearl of wisdom. So for our listeners, what would you have as a pearl of wisdom?
If you are in a job search, there's several things you that are primary there. One is keep your attitude positive. Second, never say anything negative. That's a killer.
Yeah.
If you go into an interview and somebody says, well, why are you looking for a job? And they say, well, that company let me go. I've been there 27 years. Well, you're not getting a job at this new company either. So you quickly tell them the truth, something that reflects good on you and something that reflects good on the other company, and spend 15 seconds at it. That's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure you're not doing anything to sabotage yourself. And it is a numbers game. Get out and see people. Now, you can take the night and check the boards and see where jobs are, but you're doing that to find out who are the connectors I have that can help me.
Finding get direction,
my,
right?
Yeah, find that in there so I can distinguish myself from those other 400 resumes that have been put there.
Yeah.
So it's a numbers game. Get out, see people. It's like a marathon. Put that foot in front of other each time, and you'll complete it.
PMA, keep that positive mental attitude. All right, well, Alan, we appreciate your time and coming in this morning. And If somebody wants to reach out and get in contact with you, what's the best way to reach out?
Go to our website, Challenger Gray, and Gray is GRAY.com. But mostly just give me a phone call. I'm 404-630-8865. And I'm out seeing people. I don't go into the office hardly at all. I'm out
You're
seeing
on the road.
People. I'm on the road.
You're going to Tennessee today, aren't you?
My wife and I covered Georgia, Alabama, and Tennessee because it really doesn't matter where we are. We know people in those areas. The key is getting the right coach to these people.
How many coaches do you have across those three states?
Across those three states, I have no idea. Again, we're very private. We don't give out numbers. Mr. Challenger, he's got
holds
it like
them tight.
That.
You just know you got them.
And so what we look at is if the coach is in Chicago and it's the right one,
that's
who's coming to see that person. Mm-hmm. And all of that's built in. We don't have any per diem travel costs. It's built into our program because you've got to have the right coach with
them. Good stuff.
Well, thank you for letting me be here. This has been enjoyable.
Well, it was great. Great to have you. Good conversation. So, for our listeners out there, we appreciate your time as well. And until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.